The Thursday Interview
on The Hard Shoulder.
You're listening to News Talk. It's The Hard Shoulder. I'm Mark Cagney. Now, my guest this evening for The Thursday Interview is someone who will be very well known to listeners of this programme and indeed this station. Nora Owen is a former Fine Gael TD and Minister for Justice. Nora, I want to thank you for joining me in the studio today.
Thank you, Mark.
We have great chats outside the studio.
Yes, indeed.
I don't often get a chance to get you in. So first and foremost, how are you keeping these days? How has COVID-19 been for you?
I'm keeping very well, thank God. I locked down completely, cocooned, and I was lucky enough that my son, who had been living abroad for many years, came home a year ago in March, and so he was at home with me, and he cocooned as well, but he could do little bits, and I've kept very well. And of course my lovely husband Brian is in a nursing home, and thankfully he didn't get the COVID, even though the nursing home got some cases. And so that was a less of a worry. You know, you're worried about the phone call.
But you would have been panicking about that.
Oh, I would. Oh, I tell you, it wasn't. Every time the phone rang, I thought, this is it. This is it. He's got it. And his chest isn't great, and he's 87, and you know, he would have been in very much in the line for getting a bad dose of it if he got it, but luckily he didn't. And he's not great. His dementia is well advanced, but he didn't get the COVID, so I didn't get it either. And you know, Mark, there were moments when I actually really enjoyed the lockdown. I realised I could tidy up places. I realised that I didn't have to be racing into meetings, and I did quite a bit of Zooming.
A question I've always wanted to ask you, we don't have an aristocracy in this country, but if we did, it would be a political aristocracy, and it would probably originate from the time of the treaty, 1916, War of Independence, etc. And at the top of that aristocracy, there would be two family names. There would be De Valera on one side, and there would be Collins on the other.
Yes.
You are obviously a Collins. Your grandfather was Michael. And I'm just wondering...
No, he's my granduncle. Sorry.
Granduncle, yes, I beg your pardon. Sorry. I'm just wondering what it was like growing up with that. Did you have a sense of that? Were you aware of it? Was it a burden? Was it a badge? Or did you actually wonder what the fuss was all about?
I wasn't really fully aware. My mother never talked about it. And so, in a way, it was kind of, he was a hidden person. And he was a hidden person to most people in Ireland because De Valera survived so long.
And got to write the history.
And got to write the history. He was still alive and through his Taoiseachship and presidency. So in a way, until the film was made, he kind of was resurrected again. Mm. Now, my mother didn't talk about him until we were well into our late teens, and even later for some of us, because it was a very painful time. She had been a young girl of 10 when the Black and Tans came and burnt their house down, because my grandfather, Sean Collins, or Johnny as he was known, was Michael Collins's brother. So they came to his house. They came in February of 1921, and they said, "We're going to burn you out." And my grandmother was sick in bed with, I think it was TB or something. She was dying. And luckily, there was somebody there who said, "There's a woman dying and there's 8 children here in this house." And they went away. I can't say it was very humane, but they went away and waited till she died in April and came back and burnt the house. And my mother remembers that and talked about trying to get back in to get her school bag because she was terrified she wouldn't have her school homework for the school the next day. That was the kind of thinking of a 10-year-old. And my Uncle Liam was only a baby in arms, and they all had to be taken out of the house. The house was burnt. So if you think about growing up with that and knowing that that's what you suffered. And my grandfather, on his way from a county council meeting in Cork on that day, had been arrested and put into Spike Island. So here are these 8 children with a young housekeeper, their mother just dead a couple of months, and they all had to be separated. My mother and her eldest sister Mary.
So the scars ran very deep.
The scars ran deep. And talking to other cousins and grandnieces and nephews, the same thing with the Pierce cousins down in Kerry. Auntie Mary didn't talk about it to the family either until we were all older and we began to be able to understand. So it wasn't really the reason why I got into politics. It was the reason why I would have been seen as a Fine Gaeler.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really, I mean, I got into politics because of my community activity and was approached to stand in 1979 for the council. They didn't come to me and say, "You're a grandniece of Michael Collins, you should stand."
Yeah.
They came to me and said, "Everybody knows who you are, will you stand?" You know, so it was a different kind of methodology then.
Once you were old enough to understand what being a Collins meant, what the weight of it was.
Yes.
How did you feel about that?
very proud of what Collins did. He was a 32, 33 year old man, and all he had done before that, you know, because he died at that age, but the previous 5 or 6 years he'd been very instrumental in helping us to build a nation. And I think my proudest moment probably was when Gareth Fitzgerald appointed me to the New Ireland Forum, which was in the 80s. I got elected in 81, and in 84 the New Ireland Forum started up, and he very kindly appointed me to it. And I do remember with a lot of emotion walking into Dublin Castle Yard, because the meetings were all held in Dublin Castle, walking in and remembering the picture of Collins arriving to take control and being told you're seven minutes late. And he said, well, we've waited 700 years for this. And I knew there was a kind of a moment of history. It sounds corny in a way, but there was a moment of history that I was the first of the Collinses to kind of get onto a New Ireland Forum that was going to start dealing with the, what people would say, the unfinished business of a united Ireland. And that was very important. And the next most emotional moment was when, as Minister for Justice, I stood outside number 10. And Dick Spring said to me, he said, this must be a special moment for you. And it was very emotional. And I was remembering at the time that I was arriving in a company state car, lovely big car up at Downing Street outside number 10. And Collins had arrived, having been at an early mass, arrived to the front door of number 10, but was not greeted by the Prime Minister there.
Lloyd George.
And he was sent. Lloyd George said, I don't want anybody meeting them at the front door. So the front door was opened. He slipped in and then they met Lloyd George inside. He didn't want photos of them at the front. So like here was I having the great opportunity to be the Collins that could continue doing another little piece of the work along the way.
I'm just, and as you describe it there, how could it not be emotional? Another, I'm wondering, was it another emotional moment? I mean, given our history and given the two major tribes, when this current coalition got together, was that an emotional moment for you? Because, I mean, when you think about it, it's 2020, it's almost 100 years to the original split. And here, the two tribes marry and go into government together, which is something that certainly
I didn't expect.
And my generation as well. And did you think, however difficult and bumpy a start they've got off to, this is right?
Definitely. And I made sure my Fine Gael colleagues and friends knew that I was not unhappy with this. I felt it was the right thing to do. We had to face the reality that we had to form a government. And I, you know, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, you know, along the years, there's always been agreement about a lot of stuff. And to be honest, some of the opposition is kind of fabricated in a way. When we were in opposition and Fianna Fáil were in opposition, you know, you'd know you agree with what they're saying, but for the sake of opposition, you'd say, no, we do it differently. And that's essentially what has been the difference in more recent years, doing something the same but differently. And so when it began to emerge, and it wouldn't have emerged without COVID, I think. I think Leo would have gone to the president at the end of a month when Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil weren't doing the business and probably said, look, they won't form a government. Now, Michael D. Higgins might have sent them away again. But once Leo took over then with the COVID and everything, it became clear then that, you know, there was a different, you know, scenario going to be painted. And it was the right decision for them. It wasn't easy because there were people in Fine Gael against it and there were lots of people in Fianna Fáil against
it. Well, look, if the pandemic has taught us nothing else, the only thing that actually matters is each other. And the only way we're going to get out of this is with each other. Just very quickly, and I know you're probably going to be circumspect, but I'm going to ask the question anyway, because you've been in coalition governments and you've had tricky times.
We have.
Getting along with you know, political opponents. What did you make of the last month?
It hasn't been a good month for the government. There's no point in pretending. But it could be settling down fears. It could also be recognising, you know, particularly for a party like the Greens, who they had experience in government, all right. There have been some mistakes made. There's no two ways about it. And a little bit of unsteadiness. And what I said
to
somebody...
They're not match fit, though. Neither are
Fianna Fáil. No, they're not. And remember where we've been. I mean, I was reading an article in the paper of somebody who's been working from home. And she said, I'm getting ready to go out to my first work lunch. She said, I don't know what to wear. I don't know how to get there. Suddenly, you know, you have to start being out there and giving your opinion and that. And that was easy enough when it was behind a Zoom camera and you weren't kind of allowed to be outside. It's not easy. And Micheál Martin is finding it tricky enough, and some of his own party have caused him his own troubles, and there will be more. I mean, don't underestimate human nature being what it is. I was surprised that the two Greens went offside. And maybe it's a good thing that they did early on, because they may now not want to do it again.
By the way, it's News Talk. It's The Hard Shoulder. It's Mark Hagney. And I'm delighted to be talking to former Minister of Justice and Fine Gael TD, Nora Owen. While talking about the history and your background and you know, the kind of the family lineage, people would be forgiven for thinking that, you know, life was rosy and that you had silver spoons coming out of all.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Absolutely not. I mean, you and your siblings didn't have the easiest start in life, and your father passed away when you were all quite young.
Yes, I was 4 and my eldest sister, Mary Benotti, was 10 and my youngest sister, Joan, was 6 months. Mm. And in between then, there was Catherine, who was 3, and there was Una, who was 6, and Michael, who was 8. So my mother had 6 children under 10 in 1949. And it was a very different time then for women who were widowed like that. If it was a man who lost his wife, there was a special allowance for a man to hire a housekeeper to mind the children. If it was a woman, there was no such thing. So my mother, fortunately, was a domestic science teacher and got a job in the famous Cahill Brua Street College, of which there are many people now who are ex-pupils of my mother. And I still meet them in their 80s and they say, oh, I was in college with your mother. She taught me. So she went back to work, and then we all went off to boarding school. I went to Wicklow when I was just turned 5 and I was there till I finished school. So it was 11 years in boarding school.
How did she manage that, Nora?
You know what, Mark? I don't know how she managed to pay all the fees. I suspect the Dominican nuns had a certain kind of kindness there. We never talked about it. And I suspect, and see, my mother had been at the same school, Dominican Convent in Wicklow. So she knew the school. But there were 5 of us there. My brother stayed in town and went to Belvedere. My mother worked in Cahill Brua Street. So my brother walked from Belvedere around the corner to Cahill Brua Street and sat in the porter's lodge doing his homework, waiting for my mother to go home and take him home. And we were in boarding school. And then in the summer, when we came out from boarding school, my mother was still working. We all got shared out to family members. I used to go to the Curra, where my Auntie Joan and her husband was an army man, Dick Bunworth. We stayed there, 2 of us. 2 more went down to Kerry, and 2 more went somewhere else. And we were spread around until my mother got her holidays. And luckily, it was a teaching job, so she did get July and August off.
But no silver spoons.
No silver spoons. And my memory, Mark, of August in our house was mending, letting down gym slips, mending, darning, putting new elastic, if you'll pardon the crude, putting new elastic into the long knickers, the whole works. And I got very good. I was quite a good seamstress, and I learned how to use the sewing machine. And my mother was a great seamstress. And my uniform would be, be going on to my younger sister, and I'd be getting my older sisters, and they'd be letting down. And my mother could turn pleats. Now, your older listeners will, or your younger listeners will never have heard that, but she used to turn the pleats to get, because they'd be faded on the front, and she'd turn them around and get fresh pleats on the front. And my mother sent us all to college. Like, when I look back at how she coped and how she paid for that, out of what wouldn't have been a great salary, she should have been Minister for Finance. You know, I don't know how she did it. You know?
Speaking, we're back to the politics again, yeah. And only in the sense of that was not certainly what you were thinking about. It wasn't preordained.
No.
You know, I mean, people would say, oh, well, of course, look at the family. Yes, of course, yeah. She was going to go into it. You were probably going to be either an academic or possibly even gone on the stage, followed. acting was a love, and it was in the family.
I said to somebody, you know, I didn't go into acting, but politics in a way is kind of like acting. I went to college and I did science in 1962. And that was quite an adventurous thing for a woman, because there was only about 10 or 12 women in my class, the rest were all men. Mm-hmm. But it was a good time, because in the 60s, the pharmaceutical firms were beginning to look at Ireland for investment, and the government had introduced a 10-year tax holiday. So a company opened in Swords. It was called Linson then, but it's now Bristol Myers.
All right.
And it opened there, and I got a job there. And the person who hired me happened to turn out eventually to be my husband, but he wasn't then.
That's where you met Brian.
And that's where I met Brian. Brian was the quality control manager. I was an ordinary bench chemist. Got into the job, and then we started a relationship.
Can I be very nosy, personally? Yeah. Very nosy. Yeah. When you first time you met him or saw him, what did you think?
Well, Brian was 13 years older than me, so he was the boss, and you know, I was terribly impressed, because it was my first job, and you know, he seemed to know what he was doing, but I didn't. But he was very, very outgoing. He was a great singer, and the company was out in Swords.
Did you fancy him right out of the gate?
I can't say that I did. I can't say that I did, because I wasn't thinking like that. I mean, I was 22.
Would it have been inappropriate to think like that?
It probably would. But you see, that was your life. I had some hobbies outside of the work. But really, your work was where you met people. There were lots of social gatherings, the company, and we started a social club, and I was involved in that. We started table tennis and tennis.
Did you decide you were going to go after him, or did he decide he was going to go after you?
I suspect it was he after me, because he was...
Women never admit that.
I know they don't, but Brian was 35 and I was 22, you know, so... Yeah, and I think he'd worked in England. He did science and he also did pharmacy, so he had the two qualifications. And he had gone to work in England in a paper factory, a paper company making paper. And he came back. And I imagine at that stage he began to think, really, if I'm going to get married, I better start, you know. And my mother was not overly pleased, because she thought he was a bit old. But when she discovered how handy he was, I know that's a bit unfair to my mother, but Brian was a very handy man. I mean, he did every job in the house. And so when things were going wrong at home, he'd go down and sort my mother's broken whatever it was, and she really...
It was a good way to win brownie points.
Very good brownie points, and he made it there. And he's sadly now with the dementia, but we've had a long life together, and we have three great children, Vincent, Richard and Edward. Now, the first of them is adopted, and then we had one immediately after it.
Yeah, I anybody who caught that marvellous interview you did with the late Marion Finucane, which one of those interviews, I always know a brilliant interview, right, because I'm in the car, I'm listening to it, and I have to pull over because I don't want to miss anything.
Thank you.
It was revealing and very honest,
yes.
But also it was full of warmth and love, and you can tell from the way somebody talks about their partner, you know, the kind of
I also think, Mark, it was at a time when we the people were not discussing that issue of people with dementia and Alzheimer's, and I felt if anybody could get out the message about it, I had the facility to do so. That sounds a bit big-headed, but I felt I could talk about it because I'd had my life in politics, and I realised what it meant to be a full-time carer to somebody. And that's the way a lot of people saw it. They said, oh, thanks be to God, because, you know, I've never heard anybody really talk about it so frankly.
It was really, really effective.
And it was effective. And it meant, I mean, even here, the radio stations, the televisions, they all began to take note of it. And almost every week or every second week now on any radio or television, there is some element of it, and it's helped.
It's extraordinary,
people.
Though, Nora, that we have to wait for, what is it, was it 2018 or 2019?
To actually begin to...
To have that kind of conversation.
And in fairness, I have to say, in my own case, I didn't want to talk about it for the first few years. I used to say to people, he's a bit deaf, you know, or if there was something happening, I might say, look, he's not quite sure of what you're saying. But you didn't want to kind of expose him to people looking at him as if there was something terrible wrong. And so I wasn't willing to kind of really admit it at the beginning. And a lot of people I've spoke to now who have a family member with dementia, Alzheimer's, they say, no, we didn't tell anybody, you know, we kept it kind of hidden. But now they feel they can. And of course, when I meet them, they feel they can open up to me, as they do now. And I talk to people now who are minding somebody and giving them little bits of advice, you know.
Isn't it great that you're still tackling different, difficult subjects and shining light into dark corners?
I've had a great opportunity to be in politics, and really, I've really liked the life. I really enjoyed it. There were dark times as well and difficult times, but I've had a good life out of politics, and so I feel I can give a little bit back that way. And people say to me, why are you still doing something like this? I said, because I enjoy sharing kind of the information and having a bit of crack. You know?
It is always a pleasure to listen to you on other media and in other programmes, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you. That's Nora Owen, former Fine Gael Justice Minister and TD, of course. And that's our lot for today's edition of The Hard Shoulder. My thanks to the production team. Off the Ball is up next. I'll be back tomorrow from 4 here on News Talk. Good night.